lady should not hear such words.
"Am I intruding?" she asked more seriously. "I realize that you must be very busy."
"No, not at all."
He really was delighted that she had come, he realized.
"Can I offer you a drink?
Do you have any plans for dinner?"
"Something cold," Lucita said. "I'm afraid I must be home within the hour."
"Hudson!" Dan called to the microphone hidden in the wall. "Champagne, please."
"Not champagne."
Turning back to her, "Why not? It's well chilled and quite light." Lucita wiggled a finger against the tip of her pert little nose. "It makes me giggle."
"Ah, I see. You're much too dignified a lady to be seen giggling in public."
"You're making fun of me."
"You didn't giggle at your father's party yesterday, and you were drinking champagne."
"No, I did not giggle then."
Her face grew solemn, and Dan cursed himself for breaking the mood they had created. The glass doors slid open, and Dan felt a finger of cold air touch him as the robot butler trundled into the solarium carrying a tray that bore a bottle of champagne in a hammered silver ice bucket and two frosted crystal tulip glasses. Lucita watched in silence as Dan wormed the cork out of the bottle. It popped loudly and bounced off a glass overhead panel. She jumped at the noise.
"Happy New Year," Dan said.
"What?"
"Nothing."
He poured the champagne and handed her a glass.
"Salud, bella, señorita."
"Gracias, señor."
"De nada."
Lucita barely sipped at the champagne.
"May I ask why you came to see me?"
She looked up at him, her large, dark eyes giving her waif's face a look of mixed guilt and hope.
"I want to leave Caracas.
Get away from Venezuela entirely."
Dan saw the problem instantly.
"But your father won't permit it."
"Exactly."
"You don't like the Russian?"
"He has nothing to do with it," she said.
"Really?"
"I will not have my father barter me off like some prize heifer,"
Lucita said angrily.
"And he will not allow you to leave Venezuela."
She turned to look out at the sunset.
"You have private planes. You could fly me to Brazil or Europe or even to the United States."
"I'm going to Japan tonight," Dan heard himself say, casually, almost carelessly, as if it didn't matter to him one way or the other. "Would you care to come with me?"
She whirled to face him again.
"To Japan? Tonight?"
"It's only a quick business trip, a couple of nights at most."
"Tonight? When?"
He glanced at his wristwatch.
"The flight takes a couple of hours. I thought I'd leave around 10 tonight. That'll put us in Japan by mid-afternoon, their time."
"You would take me with you?"
He thought briefly about her father and the difficulties the Minister of Technology could cause. But he said,
"Sure, if you want to come."
"I do."
Dan felt suddenly giddy.
"Okay," he said, grinning. "Meet me at the old airport between 9:30 and 9:45. I'll leave word at the gate for the guard to expect you."
"Oh, wonderful."
Lucita seemed as excited as a little child on Christmas Eve. She put her champagne glass down on the edge of the planter by the window and headed past the inert robot toward the doors.
"I must pack a bag and see that my car is ready. I'll tell my father that I'm visiting my tia Teresa. She can be my duenna for the trip."
"Duenna?"
"My chaperone. I would not go without a chaperone, of course. You will like her. She is a wonderful person."
"I'm sure."
"A phone. I must use your phone. May I?"
Dan pointed toward the living room. Lucita dashed off, leaving him standing there with his glass of champagne in his hand, feeling rather foolish.
Chapter 10. Aunt Teresa turned out to be not much older than Lucita herself. Two girls barely out of their teens, Dan thought. Lucita drove a low-slung sports car out onto the runway apron and parked it with a squeal of brakes next to his own limousine. She and her chaperone climbed out, excited as schoolgirls, as one of Dan's technicians took the car keys from Lucita and opened the trunk. At least they've packed sensibly, Dan saw, only four bags between them. Lucita was wearing a loose-fitting jumpsuit of powder blue, cinched at the waist with a wide silver mesh belt. Her hair was neatly tied back into a girlish ponytail. Her duenna wore a peasant's wide skirt, dark purple decorated with tiny embroidered flowers, and an off-the-shoulder white blouse that accentuated her full bosom. The ground crew men ogled the two of them. Even the women of the crew stared openly. Lucita ignored them, but Teresa seemed to notice their attention and enjoy it.
The hypersonic plane was parked at the edge of the apron, its silvered skin glittering under the airport floodlights. It was a smaller version of the passenger liners that crossed the Pacific in an hour, taking off like a normal airplane, then lighting off its rocket engines to arc high above the ocean in a ballistic trajectory, and finally re-entering the atmosphere like a space shuttle to land at a commercial airport. Dan welcomed the two young ladies and personally escorted them to the plane. Teresa could not be more than a year or two older than Lucita, he thought. Some chaperone. She was good-looking, with the typical dark coloring of the Latin woman, an inch or so taller than Lucita, and noticeably rounder, the kind of woman who would be on diets all her life. She would have looked very attractive to Dan if she had not been accompanying Lucita. "Stop thinking about it," Dan commanded himself. "She's just a kid. A breathtakingly beautiful kid who probably thinks of you the same way she thinks of her father. You're an older adult to her, not a romantic possibility." But another voice in his head countered sardonically, "It would be fun to teach her otherwise." He showed the two girls around the plush interior of his plane while the pilots were checking out the engines and controls. They marveled at the deep leather seats that could swivel in a complete circle, and the pull-out tables and computer terminals and phone consoles built into the bulkhead by each chair. "How does a man get to be so rich?" Lucita asked. Teresa barely suppressed a giggle. Dan replied seriously, "None of this belongs to me personally. My own real wealth is comparatively small, I'm afraid."
"Really?"
There was a challenge in Lucita's eyes, almost a mockery. With a slow smile, Dan answered, "Really? I'm barely a millionaire." She laughed, and he enjoyed it.
"But tell me truly," Lucita insisted, "how did you achieve all this?"
Teresa had already lost interest in this subject, Dan saw. She went up forward to strike up a conversation with the pilots as they checked out their instruments. Feeling a little awkward, Dan motioned Lucita to a chair and took the one facing it.
"You were not born rich," she said.
The teasing tone had left her voice. Her face was earnest now.
"I have read about your life. You were an astronaut."
Nodding, he said, "I went to Japan to work on the first solar power satellite. Even back then, the United States wasn't moving ahead in space as fast as other nations."
"And then you lived on the moon?"
"Before the Russians took over all the facilities there, yes."
"But how did you become so wealthy?"
Dan was tempted to evade her question, to crack a joke and get off the subject. But instead, he heard himself say, "Two ways. Slowly at first, and then very quickly." She waited for him to explain. "While I was working in space and on the moon, I earned a very good salary, and bonuses. I invested almost all of it in space industries. By the time I left the moon to return to Earth, I was able to convince a few bankers to loan me enough money to start Astro Manufacturing Corporation. The first few years were difficult, but once we started delivering zero-G alloys and pharmaceuticals to markets on Earth, the corporation became very profitable. I sunk most of my earnings back into the corporation to help it grow."
"I see," Lucita said. "You are a man of vision."
Dan accepted the compliment with a shrug. He did not mention that the man who convinced the bankers in Houston to invest in this unknown astronaut engineer was Morgan Scanwell, who later became president of the United States. He did not tell her that he moved his corporation to Caracas when Scanwell was forced by the Russians to dismantle all American space activities. He did not tell her that his widow, now the first woman to be president, blamed him for her husband's death, or that the two of them had been lovers behind his best friend's back. Instead, Dan pushed all those memories away and politely asked the young Venezuelan girl, "Have you had dinner?" Lucita said no, so Dan asked the stewardess to fix her and her aunt something from the galley. Teresa came back from the flight deck, and Dan gave her the chair he had been sitting in, glad to get away from Lucita's questions and the pain of the past.
"Anything for you, sir?"
the stewardess asked, giving Dan her best smile. She was tall and tempting, a drama student who had applied for work at a Los Angeles agency that specialized in hiring temporary help for major corporations. He shook his head. "I'm just going to try to take a nap," he said. Dan took a chair farther back near the tail of the plane, buckled his safety belt, and leaned back into the soft leather upholstery. Lucita and her aunt sat across from each other, chattering rapidly in Spanish as the plane taxied out to the runway, hesitated a few moments, then hurled itself down the concrete ribbon with a furious roar of sheer power, angling steeply up into the night sky. Dan saw the lights of Caracas flash past, then felt the surge of